Our first speaker, Melvin C. from New York.
Hello, Yamatic, name Melvin. You know, I want to congratulate all addicts staying clean just for today. You know, I'm a member of the We Have a Dream group in Narcotics Anonymous. We meet every Sunday night at 8 o'clock to help each other stay clean. We meet on 126th Street between Old Broadway and Amsterdam. It's right across the street from the precinct, in case anybody act up. You know, and I mention my home group every time I'm asked to share my experience, strength, and hope. Because when I first got clean, they told me to get a home group, or not a homeboy, not a home girl, right? You know, I don't know, right? I'm kind of like, I was struggling, like, doing this commitment, right? You know, and, you know, the topic of this meeting is embracing empathy. Right? And in my mind, right, I want the topic to be why people keep fucking with me. Right? Cause, you know, like, my clean date, right, is 12/26/1987, right? And I only say that not for bragging rights. I say that out of respect and the love of this fellowship that I committed myself to not using no matter what for an extended period amount of time. And we're talking about embracing empathy, right? So, like, you know, I don't know about nobody else, man. You know, like, situations has a way of bringing out the best in you. And I've been struggling to stay alive in this program. You know, staying clean ain't a game. You know, I sit back sometime and you know, I got a program and you know, and it consists of 12 little steps, right? And unlike a lot of other people, I take the steps in a manner where it's comfortable for me. And I don't agree with a whole lot of perceptions. That's why the steps are personal, right? And even though we are more alike than we are different, this journey has to be embarked on by me. And I can't be forced through the steps based on your perception. So, like, you know, I got a sponsor who helps me journey through the principles of the step. I hear everybody talking about working the steps. And you know, my thing is getting to the principle. You know, like they said, like you want to hear God mentioned in our meetings, and you know, God is so uncomfortable, but we're not even talking about the word. What I'm more impressed with is the power behind the word God. There's a power behind the word God that can't be adequately explained in words. So I'm the kind of dude that come to this program and action speaks louder than words. My grandmother, may God be pleased with her, used to always say, I'd rather see a sermon than to hear one. Yes. And in our literature, the Narcotics Anonymous program says, the proof of these steps is shown in the way we live, not how we sound. So, you know, we're talking about embracing empathy. You know, I've had some situations that happened to me in this program, and I want to just really, before I tell y'all what happened to me today, y'all need to identify with the process that it takes to get to feel the way that I feel right now. Right? I came to Narcotics Anonymous with absolutely nothing. I didn't have nothing, man. You know, everything I knew about living almost killed me. You know, and the condition I came into this program was that you know, like at the end of the road, There was a dude that used to come to the building. They called him the mailman. And he would roll up to the building. And at that time, we used to get welfare checks by delivery. They used to deliver the welfare checks to the building. And everybody used to stand in front of the building who was waiting for their welfare check. And I remember being using all night long and just standing in the position with the people getting their welfare checks. And when the mailman rolled to the building, everybody went inside the building but me. Basically because I wasn't getting no check. But in the moment of clarity, I was out there by myself. And I had to ask myself, and you know, I can laugh about this today, but it wasn't funny then. But I used to say to myself, damn, what a motherfucker got to do to get mail? I'm talking about the basic text where it talks about our living skills was reduced to the animal level. The capacity to feel human was lost. And I was in that state when I got to this program called Narcotics Anonymous. And I don't ever want to feel like that again. And Narcotics Anonymous gave me a message of hope and a promise of freedom. And said that I don't ever have to ever have to feel like that again. If I take just a few simple suggestions. And I remember going to detox. And in the detox, I ran into two guys. You know, we talk about magic of empathy is found in our members, man. And it was two guys in the detox, man. And may God be pleased with them. I haven't seen them since 1987. And they welcomed me in the detox, and they were telling me about a program, a life-changing program, a program of hope. And they told me that this program can work miracles and wonders for me, and that, like, the sky's the limit, and I can have, like, almost anything I want, and like, I can stop using it. I can, like, lose the desire to use and find a new way to live. But my only question was, if they got all of that and they were offering all that, what the fuck are y'all doing here with me? And what they told me was that they had experienced this program before. And that everything they told me was true if I only take some of the suggestions. And I left out of that program and I never seen those guys again, man. And I've been here making meetings ever since. So, you know, we carry this message in a number of ways. I hear a lot of people always talk about, you know, like the third tradition says, it's absolutely none of our business who's going to receive this message. And it says in our literature that staying clean for long periods of time is not a certainty of making it. That like the world record for staying clean is 24 hours. And you better keep your motherfucking eye on the prize. And that's not using. I hear, you know, people done got clean and done got cute. Yeah. I go to meetings, man, and they be, it ain't about using. Well, if it's not, have one. I ain't trying to get high, and I'm going to do everything that it takes not to use, man, because life, when the rubber hit the road, I don't care how many books you bought. I don't care how many step meetings you made. I don't care how many commitments you got. When the rubber hits the road, when life presents itself, you're going to either be exposed to a program you say you got, or you're going to realize you ain't fucking got one. Because it's going to go down just like that. I done heard a lot of people get up here share about all the principles, all of them. Every last one of them back to back. And when shit hit the fan, They ain't know they was high till they blew the smoke out. So I'm telling you, man, this is serious disease we got, man. This disease is fucking petty. It has a primary purpose to check with you from time to time to see if the thoughts and ideas are staying clean is fucking actually paying off. And it wants you to judge your insides with other people's outsides. It actually wants to tell you that a motherfucker that got a nice NA hat, NA shirt, NA sneakers is an NA nigga. The truth is, that's a nigga that got some NA shit. In our literature, the basic text defines what recovery is, an active change of all ideas, attitudes, and behaviors. Serious fucking disease we got. And it wants to separate you, man. It wants to separate you first from you, from God. You from others. They just want to slow walk you into a fucking dark room where you can develop all your negatives. And then it's going to talk to you, and it's going to talk to you, and it's going to talk to you, and it's going to tell you that you're with the last motherfucker that got you high. So, after all of these years, I still can't be by myself. How about that? How about that? Like it's still therapeutic for me to be with somebody. And that somebody always better be another recovering addict. Because you can't get too busy in here. Motherfuckers get too busy, then they get too tired, and then they too high. Then they really can't come back here. So, I'm telling you, I'm clean a little while, man. I'm at the top of my Narcotics Anonymous game. I'm talking about NA all the motherfucking way. You know what I'm saying? Living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. You know, in the meetings, popping shit. One promise, many gifts. You don't believe what you hear, believe what you see. Got two of everything. Giving away shit, carrying a message, traveling. Waking up with money from yesterday. And then life. I wake up one morning out of the clear blue sky. Just wake up one morning and I open my eyes. And you know how when you wake up in the morning there's a film discolor on your eyes sometimes? It's a mist that, come from sleep that sometimes be in your eyes. And I woke up one morning and I couldn't get this thing up off my eyes. It was a film discoloration on my eyes and I couldn't shake it. I went to the bathroom, I washed my face and it wasn't like something I could wash away. And I got scared. And I didn't tell nobody. Couldn't tell nobody. And I proceeded to live life just like that. We talk about denial. I was afraid to go to the doctor because now everything, I don't know about you, everything that I had stayed clean for was threatened by the ability for me not being able to see. And I worked in the healthcare field. And it got so bad that they threatened me on my job and they made me go to the doctor. The day I went to the doctor, I they told me that I couldn't come back to work until I had a doctor's permission. And in my mind, they told me that that I was fine. I didn't hear that. And I don't know about nobody else. At that point, I had just got a certificate of merit on my job for employee of the month. And I was the number one radiologist assistant. And I was making enough money. I'm not even going to say how much it was, because every time I share about that, I go through feelings. And I was making enough money to pay all my bills with one check. And I'm talking about all of my bills. So you know I paid them when I felt like it. That's how much clean time I had. Y'all want to fucking share around here? You know? So, you know, like, everything that I own was threatened. I'm 19 years clean, and everything felt like it was falling apart. I couldn't see one foot in front of me. It had gotten so bad. I also need to tell y'all, you know, I'm a diabetic. And I didn't take good care of myself. And it was a direct result of diabetes that I started losing my peripheral vision. But I made meetings every day. I had to embrace the program of Narcotics Anonymous like I never embraced anything in my life. You know, started going to meetings, and I had to call on people to come get me to go to meetings because it became real dangerous for me to just go outside. I remember going to meetings and sitting in the back of the meeting and feeling like everything was falling apart. And it's, you know, and you know, I hear people talk about depression. There's two ways to deal with depression. Either you stay in it or you get the fuck out. There's no other way. You know what I'm saying? That, you know, and that's my experience. It's my fucking experience. That ain't no clinical. Don't take my motherfucking word for it. I'm just sharing how it went down. And I made a decision that I wasn't going to be depressed even in spite of my condition. And I made meetings every day and couldn't see. We got a prayer in New Jersey that talks about, I place my hand in yours, and together we can do something I cannot do alone. And I had to lean on the program of Narcotics Anonymous like I never leaned on nothing else in my life. You know, you hear people talking about reading the literature of this program and studying the basic text and reading the judge for the day. You better, because it might come a time that you lose eyesight, you're going to need insight. Because what happened for me was everything that I've ever read in the 19 years had to come alive. Yes. It was no longer, it wasn't time for a home study course now. It was time to live the program of Narcotics Anonymous. And I realized at that point that just when I thought I was down to nothing, that God was up to something. And what he was up to, I didn't know, because I was struggling. Because at 19 years, I lost everything. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about like I was on a job for 14 years. Lost everything in 6 months. Sick time, good time, till I had no time. And I was in the welfare center, 19 years clean. In the welfare center, and I can't see. And if anybody know about the welfare center is like a negative NA meeting. You better tell them. And the reason why I say that, I'm glad you asked. It's because everybody in that motherfucker got a burning desire. And I'm hearing motherfuckers just yell out, my motherfucking check. You know, and I can't see them. I'm like, you know. I'm like, yeah. You know, now I understood what a nigga said in the penitentiary, play the wall. You know what I'm saying? Now, you know, I understand now what they're talking about. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I'm telling you, man, and all I could do was live through the experiences of other people, man. You know, my sponsor always shares, man, that if I lose everything and I don't get high, I got just enough to start over. And I had to take that and I had to swallow that. Because I lost everything, man, clean. And little by little, the process of coming to believe in the program in Narcotics Anonymous started to come alive, because I'm telling you, I made meetings every day. And I shared gratitude about being clean. I wasn't happy about my circumstances, but I shared in meetings. I shared honestly about how I felt. I said, shit, sometime a nigga need a hug, but today I need 100. Yeah. You know, because if you don't share exactly what you need, you can't, you know, people don't read your mind. And I shared exactly what I needed in this program, and people helped me, man. People put money in my hand. I thought it was funny because I couldn't see. I said, thanks a lot, and I really meant it because I couldn't count it. And I would walk outside, I was asking my man, I said, how much I got? Don't beat me. And I'm telling you, man, and one of the things about losing a lot of things is that you don't appreciate what you got until you lost it. I'm telling you, man, I was grateful, man, because, like, a lot of things started happening, man. I started appreciating this thing they call freedom from active addiction. I started to realize that in spite of my condition and what was going on with me, I was still ahead of the game. I had 7 surgeries on my eyes. Clean, without drugs. You know, they got some new shit now. They got surgery where you stay awake. Yeah, they call it light anesthesia. Yeah. And they do the surgery on your eyes, and you awoke, and they just numb, you know, they numb your eyes, and they put you to sleep. And check this out. They say, and during the procedure, they tell you that, listen, we're going to numb your eyes, and listen, if you feel pain, just let us know. You talk about suffering from a disease that expresses itself in ways that are antisocial, that make diagnosis and treatment difficult. And that's when I realized that I had 19 years clean. Because I was laying there under like anesthesia, and the doctor, all I could hear was the disease talking to me. You felt that? I'm under a light anesthesia, man. I'm talking about like my life was on the line and the disease is still operating through my subconscious. And all I had was my clean time. And all the hope that I had was that I got to get out of here clean. I can't tell the doctor that I felt that. Even if I did feel it. You ain't feel it. God damn it. You ain't feel it. talking about clean, y'all. I'm sharing for identification purposes. I'm talking about like we do recover. And I came out of my seventh surgery, you know, and I was in my doctor's office, and I remember feeling like, you know, like there was no hope, man. You know, and I remember, you know, after the surgery, I would go to see the doctor, and he had an eye chart. And you know, after the surgery, they used to tell me, you know, we took the bandage off, and they say, it's going to be a process. And he told me, he says, Melvin, you know, can you see the chart? And I remember all I could do was start crying because I couldn't see nothing. And he said, what's the matter? And I said, I can't see nothing. And he put the light inside my eyes. And he said, what do you see? I said, I can't see the letters. He said, what do you see? He said, can you see the light? And I said, yeah, I can see the light. He said, if you can see the light, then there's hope. And I swear to God, he was in the program. I wanted to get an eye doctor a hug. You know, but I walked out of here with a hope shot, y'all. I walked out of there believing that there's hope, man. That like the doctor said, that if I can see the light, that there was hope, man. And little by little, I was able to get a small opportunity to gain a sense of independence through my vision coming back. And I can't fully see because now I'm you know, recovering. You know, I'm legally blind. And a lot of times, a lot of people walk around here in this fellowship and they say stuff to me like, you know, Melvin, you know, I was standing right there and you ain't see me. And the truth is, I didn't see you. It ain't personal. How you tell a blind nigga you ain't see me? and I just pray for the ability that people will come out of their self-centeredness and reach out and understand where I'm coming from. You know, I went to school to learn how to walk with a cane as a direct result of being legally blind. You know, I took some classes and just for the day, you know, because I struggle with my image, you know, I just choose not to walk around with the stick. You know, some people say, you know, that's insanity. Shit, you go blind. You'll fight for every bit of sight you got left. Because for me, a sign of me walking around with my stick is a sign of me giving up. You know, I'd rather walk into something first. Fuck that shit, you know. I got true self-acceptance. I walk around here like Ray Charles. I be touching niggas. You know, that's you? You know, but like, you know, I'm gonna do this right, and you know, just for the day, right? I was sitting at home, man, and you know, like, you know, I lost a lot when I lost my eyesight, right? But I've gained a whole lot because, like, when you lose something, you gain something. And the gift that I've gained was the ability to learn how to listen. You know, because anybody knows that, like, we got five senses. And when you take one away, you gain a heightness of another. So my listening becomes my eyesight. A lot of times I listen to where I'm going before I start looking. Because that is what I used when I learned in school. Touch, listen, before I move. And a lot of times, You know, I practice what I've learned in school. And you know, just for today, man, I'm just trying to live the program to the best of my ability. You know, God put something on my heart. You know, one time I was in the house and, you know, you hear people say all kind of shit clean and that, like, you know, money ain't the most important thing in the whole wide world. You know, but it's right next to oxygen. Because when I realized I wasn't getting a check no more, I couldn't breathe. So I'm still detoxing from that shit there. You know, and so, like, you know, just for today, man, I'm grateful because, you know, I started my own business. And I'm really trying to steadfast, trying to be independent, self-supporting, self-reliable, and practice principles all at the same time. And it's difficult because my business is related to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I started a t-shirt business. I started a company called Step Your Game Up. And I went the NA way. I applied for a Narcotics Anonymous World Service approved license to become an independent vendor to sell NA wearables. And ever since I received my license in the mail 2 years ago, it has been nothing but people creating their own policies based on how they feel. Narcotics Anonymous gave me a license. You got people walking around the fellowship talking about, I don't feel that people should be selling any merchandise. When you get your own motherfucking program, we'll respect how you feel. But right now, this program belongs to the recovering addicts. And obviously, God had put it on my heart to do it. And I'm not going to allow man to stop or create what God already ordained. So I'm going to share this in closing, right? I got a little resentment, right? I wasn't going to share. I had an issue with this convention. And a lot of times, you know, I talk to my sponsor. And sponsorship is the heartbeat of this program, man. And my sponsor put things in my court, and he says stuff like, you know, I believe that you'll do the right thing. I was like, that's a lot of fucking help. I really wanted him to help me make a decision. Because I don't know about nobody else. I'm still not that far away from the program where I really, you know, addicts just need somebody to blame. So I really wanted my sponsor to tell me what to do, so if shit didn't work out, I was like, my sponsor said it. You know, but it didn't work out like that. So, you know, like, the bottom line is, like, I'm going to say this and go. I sent a proposal to this convention to sell merchandise as an NA vendor. I have an NA license, registered with World Service Office, and I'm playing by the rules. And I'm going to go out and say this. I'm one of the only black vendors in Narcotics Anonymous, licensed by World Service. I'm going to take a risk and say it. You know why I'm going to say that? Because I get the list. And it doesn't say black or white. No, but I can tell by y'all name. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's a registered list that they send from the regional service office, the world service office, with all the registered vendors' numbers, names, email addresses, and phone numbers. So if you want to know if a motherfucker got a license, all you got to do is contact Rural or any vendor. All you have to do is ask them for it. And I'm registered. That's why I'm saying that shit. Because I, you know, my sponsor teaching me that I got to play by the rules. So me playing by the rules, sometimes I get offended by people who make decisions and they don't play by the rules. You know, so I send the guy the proposal in January of last year. I mean, of this year. Was it last year?
Last year.
January last year. The convention happened this year. About 5 months ago, I did a function, or 6 months ago, I did a function for East of the River. You know, and I did some shirts for them, and I ran into the merchandise chair person over there, and he told me that I was allowed to sell my merchandise at the convention only one day, that they didn't vote for me to sell my merchandise here for the whole weekend. That's the last time I talked to him. 2 weeks before the convention, you know, I'm thinking that I could come down and sell my merchandise on Sunday. I booked a room. I planned to come down here. Brought a newcomer with me, you know. I came back out on the newcomer. I done told him he can come and that I was going to take care of him. And then I get a phone call by, well, I ain't going to share that part, right? But I found out that they didn't even vote for me to sell merchandise for one day because I'm not a part of a region or area. And nor do I feel the need to pretend that I am from an area or region just to make $2. Based on fucking principle, sometime money ain't worth it. You know, and so like, you know, but I really, you know, contacted they said they had a BOD, Board of Directors, for this convention. So I contacted somebody from the BOD, whoever the fuck that is. And I talked to them and they said, well, Melvin, a long time ago, we voted for you not to come. And the chairperson was supposed to contact you. I said, well, the person never called me. So I happened to call, I'll be finished, right? I happened to call a BOD, and he was on the phone with the merchandise chairperson. Hypothetically, you talk about God. So I says to him, he says to me, do you mind if we get on the three-way? I said, that would be perfect. Because I need to get down to the summit of this. And before he clicked over, he said, hold on, let me, out of respect, ask the other person if it's all right to do a three-way with them. I want to invade their privacy. As soon as he clicked over, my stomach flipped. Because by the time he got back to me, I knew that there was something wrong. And he told me that I have to call you back because he don't want to get on a three-way with you. Out of respect, he has that right. But I feel that out of respect and the way the protocol is, we have literature and our traditions talk about if we got trusted servants, they are directly responsible for those they serve. And I just feel that I deserve at least a courtesy phone call as a member of this fucking program to say that, like, you can't come. I haven't yet been uninvited to sell merchandise here. You know, my disease, I don't know about nobody. I got a disease called bust a move. Yeah. I was going to act the fuck up. But my sponsor clicks in my head and says, we got to play by the rules. You know, I packed up all my merchandise and I bring it down here anyway. I said, I'm a be a parking lot vendor. But I'm telling you, I've been clean 21 years and it's just some shit in my spirit. I just can't do. In spite of all the evidence that my disease will walk me all over. Listen, man, your defense will do a job that the finish. You know, this disease will try to do a job your defects didn't finish. Serious. So, I bought the shit and I was caught up. I was caught up. I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm selling shit out the back of the truck. I don't give a fuck. You know, fuck this. I said, go get the keys. We getting ready to bust a move. And I'm walking in the parking lot. This ain't out of no disrespect, man. I'm walking in the parking lot and somebody who I know sell t-shirts pull up in the parking lot. And I looked and I seen myself. And that's what would have been exactly how I would have looked if I would have opened up the back of the trunk and I couldn't do it. If anybody read the Just for Today, today talked about shortcomings. And Just for Today, man, you know, I just want to, you know, say for the record that had it not been for coming up short, I wouldn't have had the ability to come back. So I just want to say for the record, man, that just for today, man, I came down here and I was going to sit in the meeting and you know, the guy never said that, you know, that he was going to give me a call back. And he said to somebody that he sent me an email. He said, he sent me an email saying that I wasn't going to do the commitment. And so, you know, I said I was going to come to the meeting and I was going to sit down. And when they called my name to share, I was going to say, y'all didn't get the email. that I wasn't sharing. But I talked to my sponsor. And my sponsor said, I believe in you that you'll do the right thing. So I just shared about how I felt. And so embrace the empathy of how the fuck I feel. Thanks for listening.
At this time, I would like to introduce our second speaker, Rashida J. from Philly.
I'm an addict called Rashida. Always take this time out to thank God for allowing me to be here. You people for keeping me here, I say that because it's the truth. I also say that with a lot of deep sincerity because I mean that from the bottom of my soul. If you knew, I want to ask that you keep coming back and tell you that you never, ever, never, ever, never, ever, never, ever, ever have to use drugs again. I want to thank Melvin for sharing his experience, strength, and hope on embracing empathy. I also like to thank this committee, the Chesapeake and Potomac area, for asking me to come out. Oh, you're going to hear. For having them ask me to come out to share my experience, strength, and hope of recovery this evening. If the mic ain't on, it's not meant to be taped. So whoever it is got to hear it. Oh, well, maybe I don't need to touch this. I was in the meeting, an 11-step meeting, and I left out the meeting and I went to take a moment, and I walked in the back of the building outside to the water. Because it's something about water that will calm your spirit down. Because one of the things I understand just for the moment is it's about telling the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth. You know, last week I was in Detroit at the convention, and they asked me to share on a topic that talked about healing the past, looking towards the future. And I come here this week, and the topic is embracing empathy. Currently, I'm in the process of a fourth and fifth step. So you can tell right now, I'm all jacked the fuck up. It's something when God chooses you to do what it is that he wants you to do without your permission, without even asking him. You know, Thursday, I had to take my son to the doctor's because he had to have an operation on his knee. My son is in his freshman year of college, and he hurt his knee, so he had to have an operation. In his last year of high school, he had an injury. Now, he's been playing basketball from age 9 until 18 and never was hurt. So anybody know anything about any sports, they understand that when you're trying to get to college, your last 4 years of high school is very important to your career to make it to the next level. So he hurt his ankle, and he was devastated. So he gets to college, freshman year, and he has to have surgery on his knee. Now, at the time when I took him, the doctor allowed us to know that they couldn't tell us what was actually going on in his knee until they went in it. My thing was, whatever happens, whatever's going to happen, we got to have some acceptance with that. He's 19 years old. He want to play basketball. He ain't got no acceptance. But he has a mother that has a program and has some principles in her life, and I try to continue to encourage him through the process of believing in God. So he told me the night before, he said, "Listen, Mom, when I wake up, you're the first person I want to see." He said, "Because I don't really want to go under." And the reason why he said that was 4 years ago, and I was sharing with some friends of mine, 4 years ago, he had a swimming accident, and it damn near took his life. Here go a kid that God blessed me with when I got clean in this program. I used to ask my mother, "Where did he come from? Because he ain't nothing like me. He's never have given me any problems. You know, he's always been a good kid, always went to school, did the right thing for the right reason." And I continue to tell him to believe and trust in Almighty God. He got you. But when he had the accident, he said that he knew he was dead because he seen the white light. It wasn't until after a year of him surviving that I found out that they had my son when the ambulance came, that he was in cardiac arrest. That means he was dead. And anybody know me know that I have two sons, and I love my boys. And at that time, I had some clean time, 12 steps, a sponsor, support group, but I don't know if I had enough in me to be able to survive that if something had happened to him. And listen, I am so grateful right now at this very moment because God has allowed me to celebrate 21 years clean. April the 13th, Monday. And I say that because Melvin talked about 19 years clean, and you look up and you have lost everything. I was 20 years clean. And I woke up after experiencing 20 years clean, going to Miami, South Beach, because those are one of the benefits you get in here when you stay clean and you stay connected to people. They love you enough, they want to take you places. And when I came home, all hell broke loose. In February of last year, I went out sick on my job. The only benefit that I took out at that time at my job was short and long-term disability. I didn't want no more of the other benefits. Little did I know I would have to use those benefits in February. I went to the doctors, I got ill, and my doctor said to me when I came in her office, "Rashida, you don't look right to me. You look fine, but you don't look well." And I bust out crying because I was in over my head. I was overwhelmed. I was in doctoral school. I was working full time. I'm a full time mother, a full time wife. Didn't know. Now, I was diagnosed clinically with situational depression. Had no acceptance, none at all. I didn't care what y'all said. The literature talks about the last thing to go is the stigma. Of being an addict. Then my good Sharon ass said to myself, "Oh, wow. You done 20 years clean. You got a master's degree. You working on a doctorate. Disease say you can't take no medication. You can't tell nobody." And dig this, it wasn't even about how you was going to view me. It was how I viewed myself. I don't know about anybody else. I've been here all my life. There's no other place for me to go. No other place. I came in this program April the 13th, 1988. I was 16 years old. I will be 38 tomorrow. So there is no other place for me. If I don't do this, I'm going to die. If I don't continue to keep renewing my spirit and keep my renewing my relationship with Almighty God, We talking about embracing empathy, feeling something. Listen, when I came here, I felt nothing. It's something when you come in this program. And your heart is hard. And you vow that you're not going to let nobody get in that, listen, in that space. I used drugs for many years because I didn't like the way I felt. Only to come into a process that it breaks all of that stuff down. Listen, you look up and God will shut everything down. The doctor said you got to come out of work. You got to come out of school. I have 7 classes left. Immediately I felt inadequate. It wasn't about what y'all thought about me. And at that time I was in a process of a second step. And it talks about my own expectations. Yeah, I'm a fucking overachiever. Because y'all told me I can have what I want long as I don't use no drugs. So I strive to be better at everything I do. And I ain't had no acceptance. I shut everybody out. I stopped connecting with my sponsor. I stopped calling people. I wasn't going to my home group. Listen, because that was the first time I was ever at a space like that. We talking about being in a state. And my total self-centeredness was... I didn't want to stop doing what I wanted to do. In the process of all of that, my son was getting prepared to go to college. And it was like I had to take him different places. Because after the injury, he was a Division I prospect. After the injury, he became a Division II. He lost his stock. Now, I'm a mother. If I can't do it for my boys, it can't be done. And I couldn't give him no Division I school. So all I had to do was pray. And I had to keep reiterating to him about when he had the accident. And he shared with me, he just knew he was dead because he seen this white light. And I said, do you know what that means? This is a 15-year-old kid. Let me tell you what God will do for you. Because you don't always get the answers here. He looked me in my eye and said, yes, I do. He said, I'm blessed. I said, and do you understand that everybody that crosses over to that nice place and see the light, they do not live to tell about it. So your life is no longer yours. So here go the same kid Thursday. And when I walked in the room, I just immediately knew, because in my gut, I knew something was wrong. When I pulled the cover back, he had a brace. And he had this look in his eyes. and the powerlessness. One of the things I understand, it's not my place to take my children where they need to be, but do you know the feeling when you can't do nothing but rely on Almighty God? And when you, listen, you people gave me the belief, my relationship. You say trust God. So could you see me continue to keep encouraging this 19-year-old kid who's saying, you keep saying that, but ain't nothing happening. So when I looked up, the ultimate weapon and this program, when I come in here, I am safe. Know why? Because I am in protective custody. When I looked up, my good girlfriend was coming through the door. When I looked up, my sponsee was coming through the door. And at that point, I shut up. And they begin to talk to him. Because sometimes the people that's closer to you, you can't hear them. So little did I know, he made a decision he won't go back to school the next day, which was yesterday. He got the brace on. He fine. He say, Mom, I got a prior commitment. And he knew I was coming here. And he didn't want to mess up my weekend. But I told him, he wasn't going to mess up my weekend. What did he needed me to do? And me and my sister drove him back to the college. But I want to say this, because, you know, we tell each other things in this program, and then when we begin to live this program like y'all tell us. See, I come from an era, they didn't suggest anything for me to do. They knew better to tell me a suggestion. They told me, I'm going to be nice. They told us, they gave us some direction. And in that direction, I learned to practice that. So, you know, last year around this time, I'm going through this depression thing and I'm trying to take care of my household, because that's what y'all tell me to do. Then I get a letter in the mail from the job. They didn't fire me, but I'm on sick leave. My son is graduating from high school, going on a prom. My youngest son is graduating from middle school, going to high school. And I don't have no income. Now, yes, I'm married. My husband works every day. Understand what I'm saying. I didn't have no income. You know, it's something that when God, when the person he put in position to help everybody, and he will put you in a position where you need everybody to help you. One of the things, especially for the members that have some clean time, we have the most difficulty with asking for help. So, I'm devastated. The inadequacy, the thinking I'm not good enough, I'm not being a good mother, I couldn't provide for my children. People was calling me and they was saying, Rashida, would you come share here? Would you come share there? Now, guess what? I had the intention on showing up. But the money that I was getting at the time, I needed to help my son get where he needed to be. I couldn't come share at every motherfucking convention. And people dogged me out. And I say, well, wait a minute. When y'all told me this is what I needed to do in order to get where I needed to be, then when I did that still ain't good enough. So, you know, I even, people that I had relationships with, I found out our relationships was built on me sharing at your convention. Because you want to sell some fucking tapes. And I'm telling you, I'm going through it. I can't show up. Get somebody else. The meeting need to go on. What has been important to me in this process is learning how to show up and be there. Not so much for you, but for my children. I learned unconditional love through my boys. And when y'all not there, guess what? They're there loving me, telling me it's going to be okay. So when you come around here, listen, people going to talk about you. They're going to say a whole lot of stuff. Listen, they ain't even going to make up shit about you. Listen, it don't really matter. And I was feeling all that. And I began to shut down and I began to shut out. And I got a phone call. Here go the empathy. Here go the embracing. The phone call I got was my sponsor. And she say, listen, I'm looking for you. I'm getting ready to hunt you down. I was getting ready to come to your home group because I ain't heard from you. I ain't seen you. That's not like you. And all I could do was cry because I got in touch with, at that moment, the third Peter value, one addict helping another. She said to me, listen, Rashida, I will let you go in and get another sponsor because I don't feel like I'm helping you. I want you to get some help. I don't want you to die from this disease. You ever know? Listen, it comes a point in time in your life where you can see you coming all the way from back there. But I didn't see me coming this time. And I began to share with her. It's nothing wrong with her. It's me. And I might be a little crazy, but I ain't the fuck retarded. And I don't need no another sponsor. I need her. But in this process, it tells us to find someone in NA who believes in you and wants to help you in your recovery. She believes in me, and she wants to help me. And I begin to tell her the truth. I don't have no acceptance with this depression. Do you know how that made me feel? I didn't want to admit it. But until I admitted it to myself, I was able to share with somebody else. Because when the doctor said situational depression, I said, well, what's that, a situation? But But it was a collective of situations, circumstances. You can go all over the world, share, help people, do this, that, and the third. But my sons didn't have decent attire to graduate school, and that was important for me to do. And my husband said, oh, no, don't go to the pawn shop. I said, listen, things are things. What's the use of having them when if you can't use them when you need them? I'll sell all that shit. Furs, diamonds, jewelry, all that. And that's what I did. I went to the pawn shop and pawned shit, sold stuff, and dig this, and still got a lot left. Because we don't want to come in here and let y'all know we struggling. 21 years clean, locked and loaded, obsessed and compulsed, still. Don't want to have enough courage to like want to step out on the faith that you say you have. Because you, listen, you know you're not being fulfilled. See, I'm not one real good with appearances. You know, some people, oh, how it look, it appears to be. Fuck all that. It is what it is. Listen, people can change their minds. And you can't be mad. You can't even hold no resentments. This process, man, has like afforded me an opportunity. I'm going to share this. My mother put me in treatment when I was 16. And just recently, and listen, it took me 10 years in this program to get a relationship with my mother. Not because she didn't love me. It's because she was looking in the mirror. When she looked at me, she looked at her. And see, she couldn't control me. I've always been the type of individual, I did what I wanted to do, when I wanted to do it, said what I wanted to say. Listen, I'll tell my sponsor in a minute. I'm not coming to you with that old craziness because I'm not ready to stop doing what I'm doing. I don't want no help right now. I'm just telling you. Especially when it's good, I don't want to stop. And I don't like giving up stuff I like. I'll give up something I don't like in a minute. That don't matter. But can you give up the things that you like? Can you give up the things that you want to have? Or you think you want to have them. So at 10 years clean, we had to take my mother all the way to Cleveland, Ohio, so she can have an operation to save her life. Y'all talking about embracing empathy. I stood outside just a moment before I came here and looked at that water and understood that that has been going on this whole year of my life. Because I have been put in a position where I have to show up for people that's always been there for me. And my mother is one of them. Do you know how hard it is right now? My mother put me in treatment because she said to me, before I allow drugs to do to you what they have done to me, I'm going to get you some help. God done put me in a position where I got to tell her the same thing. From a direct result of having this operation, she was on morphines and oxycontins and this, that, and the third. And she's abusing the medication. And a couple weeks ago, we had to go to this place and talk to these doctors who's giving her this medication. You know how you go to the spot. That's the hookup. They just writing fucking prescriptions and just giving them to people. You, matter of fact, I can go in there and tell them what I want. The doctor about 90 years old. My mother from the old school. She's an old dope fiend. So she know how to manipulate the system. But it's killing her. My mother suffered from aneurysms. Do you know when my sister called me and say it's something that has to be done? And if I can come here and show up for you, I can show up for my mother. Because I only got one. I never knew God was going to have me in a position. You're talking about embracing empathy. Where I would have to be in the same position 21 years later. And the shoe is on the other foot. My father then came back in my life. Thank you. I'm going to give you all of it. Because when I leave out of here, it's over. God has put my father back in my life. A man who at one point in my life I despised him. Didn't fucking want to help him. And was okay with telling you I don't fucking want to help him. And I got a sponsor, right? When you call her, she just say that one line shit to me. And she know it be too much for me. You know, because sometimes we be looking for the deep end of it. Ain't that deep. It ain't that serious. And she said to me, listen, you can